Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media.
About those New Year's resolutions, how are they working for you? Probably not at all if you're like most people. Change always seems possible when the ball drops in Times Square and we toast the new year, but by the end of January, we fall back on ingrained habits and same old behaviors. Why is change so hard? Can an old dog learn new tricks?
Probably not a dog, but the rest of us can, using a tool that's unique to human beings. So says our next guest, a science writer and public education specialist. David DeSalvo is the author of three books about the human brain and cognitive psychology. His most recent is Brain Changer, How Harnessing Your Brain's Power to Adapt Can Change Your Life. He joins us to explain how we can gear our brains for change. Welcome to Take Care, David. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Not that long ago, it was thought that the personality we were born with was largely influenced by genetics, but now science is showing that our brain's ability to adapt and change is far greater than was once thought. So what's the implication of that new information, and how can it help us in our life, maybe be happier people, live better? What's your thought?
Well, the overriding implication is that our brains are incredibly adaptive marvels of nature, much more so than we previously thought. And the last 20 years of research coming out of neuroscience and cognitive psychology has really shown that for much of scientific history, we've undervalued the ability of our brains to adapt. So what we've discovered is that things like personality and ingrained habits and some things that we've taken to be, you know, quote-unquote genetically predestined actually are a lot more malleable than we previously thought. And we do have the ability to, if not totally control, to certainly influence to a great degree a lot of these things.
So this can happen throughout life, because the belief was that once you reached a certain age, the brain wasn't as plastic, it wasn't as malleable, and you were stuck. You weren't going to learn a new language, you weren't going to pick up new habits, you were going to be just the same person you always were.
Right. Yeah, the understanding was that, you know, in infancy and early in life, our brains are sort of like a sponge, whereas, you know, information was constantly being absorbed and processed. And then moving into adolescence, something called the pruning period would happen, where the brain would, that kind of rapid growth would stop and sort of a pruning down, you know, if you think of pruning your rose bushes, would occur where, you know, the most necessary things would remain and a lot of the extraneous things would be pruned down. And then the thinking was, after that, you're pretty much got the brain you got. And for the rest of life, we had, you know, a static, very powerful organ, but a static organ that we would take throughout life. And what we now know is that, while certainly, this, you know, the sponge period and the pruning period definitely exist, we also know that our brains are not static after that, that there are significant areas of our brains that are, you know, the term that's used in neuroscience these days is plastic. You hear the term neuroplasticity used a lot. And what that really refers to is a flexibility, a malleability, an adaptability in brain tissue. So that's been, you know, if you had a point to kind of the, I would say, the biggest discovery coming out of neuroscience in the last couple decades, that's been it, that our brains are changeable after that pruning period in adolescence.
In our introduction, we alluded to the fact that you identify a tool that we can use that will really lead to lasting change. What is that tool?
There's a couple tools that I talk about in the book, but kind of the tool that everything else is kind of hinged on is called metacognition, which is the uniquely human ability of, just as the term applies, thinking about our thinking, that we have the ability to distance ourselves or take a third person perspective on ourselves so we can think about our thinking in the process of thinking. This is something, as far as we know, is unique to humans. And by doing that, we gain greater control over this adaptability mechanism that, you know, we kind of have another position we can take, a very dynamic position in the thinking process we can take, which enhances our ability, for instance, to change habits. You know, good habits, bad habits, whatever habit it is, habits are very ingrained. We all know how difficult they are to change once they are established. But what research has uncovered is that if people get, as people become more experienced and skilled in being able to enable change through metacognition, habits, while still not easy to change, are changeable. You know, we give ourselves the ability to adapt to a degree that we would not otherwise have.
Okay, so metacognition would then be that stepping back from that place where something happens to us and we ruminate on it, we think about it, we worry about it, and we're really anxious about it. So that we're very much into our head and we can't break that pattern. So metacognition is, you're saying, you can step back from that and observe that process of your worrying and thinking about something. That's what it is? Because it sounds like meditation to some extent, that separation, that ability to understand that it's just a thought and to let it sit.
Meditation is a tool. You know, right now we're hearing a lot in popular news media about mindfulness. And really what everything, you know, mindfulness can be boiled down to this ability to stop our thinking. And meditation is a tool that enables that. You know, the natural tendency of thought is rumination. Human thought is an incredibly powerful thing, but if left to its own devices, we will ruminate. You know, thought, the mind is structured in such a way that we tend to sort of, go off into tangents in different directions. And this is why, you know, rumination and depression are, you know, there's such a tight linkage between rumination and depression, because once you get on a negative thinking tangent, it's very, very easy. In fact, it's the path of least resistance for your brain to just keep going in that direction. So metacognition is really just a term that encapsulates things like mindfulness and tools like meditation, which is the ability to stop and to separate ourselves from that thinking pattern. And that's kind of where this all begins. You know, whatever tool you use, whether it's meditation, whether it's yoga, whether it's a combination of things, the end goal is the same, is to stop that, be able to gain greater control of the thinking processes that would otherwise lead to rumination.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And our guest today is David DeSalvo. He's an author and science writer. His latest book, Brain Changer, How Harnessing Your Brain's Power to Adapt Can Change Your Life. We're talking about metacognition, but what I think would be really helpful for us and our listeners is to choose an example of behavior. And then you could walk us through how it would play out if we were thinking about our thinking enough to change our brain, enough to change our behavior. And since we're talking about New Year's resolutions, as we referred in the intro, we all make them with the highest of hopes. And then by about the third week in January or later for different people, things that we had hoped to change, we weren't able to do. One of them, and there are many, but one of the more popular ones, let's say, is wanting to exercise more. We know it's healthy and we vow this is the year I am going to incorporate exercise into my life. So would that be a good example to use where you could help us so that when we're done listening to you, we can make these changes or at least work towards that goal? How would that fit into the model that you're describing with metacognition?
Yeah, that's a great example. So, you know, with something like exercise and diet, I think goes in the same category, but exercise is a great example because, you know, we all know that at the beginning of the new year, gym memberships go through the roof, right? You can't, If you normally go to a gym, a lot of people who normally go to gyms stay away from them in January because they know that they're going to be waiting to get on every machine because there's so many people flooding into the gym. So this is obviously something that takes up a lot of our mind space. at the beginning of the year. And often, and the gym industry knows this very well, and they come around March, April, a lot of those memberships taper off. People stop going. So the question is, how can you not only, you know, it's fairly easy to capitalize on the momentum of the new year. We all feel like, okay, this is our clean slate. This is where we can start off, you know, anew with fresh energy to do this. We can all kind of harness that pretty effectively. The question is, how do you sustain it? And then, you know, so this gets into this kind of dovetails with what we're talking about with metacognition and adaptability, because, you know, you have to be able to move beyond the initial surge momentum of energy, which is going to carry you to some extent, right? That will carry you for a few weeks. You can kind of ride the wave of that momentum for a while. What are you going to do after that is really the issue. And so that's where thinking comes into play, because we can kind of ride that energy without really having to think about it very much. At that point, you've got to metacognitively adopt some thinking strategies. And what that means is you've got to separate yourself from that, you know, the weeks that you're kind of absorbed that energy and you're riding that wave. You got to be able to sort of distance yourself from that. And, you know, metacognitively, however you choose to do it. And, you know, some people do use formal tools like meditation, mindfulness training. I think that's great. I don't think necessarily you need a formal tool. I think you need to adopt some basic skills to enable you to think a little bit more clearly, a little bit more separately. You kind of have to separate yourself from this person who's kind of, you know, caught up in this wave of energy. And you have to think about, okay, what is going to enable me to sustain this thing I want to do for long-term goals? You know, it's not a short-term thing. Exercise does very little in the short term. We want to sustain for long-term effect. So at that point, one of the thinking strategies you may adopt is specificity. You know, one thing people often do with exercise, they say, is, okay, I'm going to exercise, 5 days a week or 4 days a week, and at an hour each time. And, you know, I'm going to do this over the course of months, and that's going to result in losing weight, and I'm going to look better, and so forth. But you may have to get more specific than that. You know, you may have to get specific about, okay, you know, specifically which days a week, when am I going to do it during the day? I mean, I may need to schedule this in. I may actually have to incorporate this into my planner. You know, you may need to create, if you use Outlook or Timeflow, one of these apps, you may need to create, you know, a reminder for you to do it. You have to start building in specificity into your structure so that you're actually better enabling yourself to do this. And, you know, there's obviously thousands, hundreds of tools people could use to do this, but it all kind of comes down to the same thing. You've got to think more strategically about, you know, creating opportunities to keep a sustainable habit in place, as opposed to, you know, just this short-term momentum. So that's one example. I think no matter what, we're all going to kind of have that surge of energy at the beginning of the year, and it's going to be very hard to capitalize on that level of energy for the new year throughout the course of the year. But it's really not necessary to have that same level of energy. What's necessary is that we create a sustainable, structure that we can live in. We don't have to necessarily be, you know, hugely motivated all the time. And I think that's, you know, something helpful for people to keep in mind.
All right. If somebody wants to apply metacognition to their life, just one simple, small entryway into thinking about thinking, we have about a minute left. What would you advise them? How would you guide them?
I think one thing that they can do, right off the bat is something that is a very simple thing I talk about in the book. It's often called, I call it the awareness wedge. Some researchers have called it a cognitive pause. And it is actually visualizing a wedge or a pause that breaks into, if you will, your thinking process. And the example I always give of this is, you know, you're in a car, you're on the highway, somebody cuts you off in traffic. You have in that fraction of a moment, you have a chance to insert that wedge between your current thinking and the next action step. Usually we just reactively go to the next action step. So this takes training. So this is something people have to train themselves to do. But I think of it as actually visualizing a wedge that comes down into your thought process and literally stops where you are and provides a pause, a cognitive pause, to the next step. So that's I think it's not a simple thing by any means, but it is something that everybody can practice and learn. It's a skill that virtually anybody can adopt.
David DeSalvo is a science writer and public education specialist. His most recent book is Brain Changer: How Harnessing Your Brain's Power to Adapt Can Change Your Life. Thank you so much, David.
Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it.